This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Dr. Gary Chapman, author of The Five Love Languages, celebrating its 25th anniversary. Welcome, Dr. Gary.
Well, thank you, Duncan. Good to be with you and Laura.
So listen, how did you originally come up with The Five Love Languages?
It actually grew out of my counseling. They would sit in my office and one of them would say, I just don't feel any love coming from him. And he would say, I don't understand that. I do this and this and this. Why would you not feel loved? So he was sincere, but he was missing her emotionally.
Yeah.
And I heard similar stories over and over and over. So eventually, I asked myself, what is behind this? There has to be a pattern here. So I sat down and read several years of notes that I made when I was counseling people and asked myself the question, when someone said in my office, I feel like my spouse doesn't love me, what did they want? What were they complaining about? And their answers fell into five categories. And I later called them the five love languages.
And can you run us through what...
Using it. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, can you run us through what those five are?
One is words of affirmation, using words to affirm the other person. You look nice in that outfit. Really appreciate what you did. One of the things I really like about you, just anything, you know, that you can affirm them verbally. And then another love language is acts of service, doing something for them. In a marriage, that might be such things as cooking meals, washing dishes, vacuuming floors, walking the dog, washing cars, mowing grass, anything.
That of course, is the best love language.
Well, you know the old saying, actions speak louder than words.
Amen.
And for these people, if this is their language, actions do speak louder than words. And then there's gifts. It's universal to give gifts as an expression of love. The gift says, they were thinking about me. Look what they got for me. And the gift doesn't have to be expensive. It's just thinking about your spouse and finding something that would be meaningful to them. And then there's quality time, giving the person your undivided attention. I do not mean sitting on the couch watching television because someone else is. TV is off, computer's down, we're looking at each other, we're talking, we're interfacing. Or we can be taking a walk down the road, or we can be working in the yard together. But the important thing there is not what we're doing, it's that we're doing it together. So quality time. And then there's physical touch. We've long known the emotional power of physical touch. In a marriage, that is such things as holding hands, kissing, embracing, the whole sexual part of the marriage, arm around the shoulder, riding down the road, you put your hand on their leg, or sitting around the house and they walk by and you trip them.
That's the most loving one of all.
Kidding on the last one, okay? Don't trip yourself.
And has there been like more love languages that have come to mind after you first wrote that 25 years ago, or do you think those five still sum it up really well?
Well, you know, one guy told me, he said, Dr. Chapman, there is a sixth love language. And I said, what is it? He said, chocolate. I said, well, if they bought it, it's a gift. If they made it, it's an act of service. So it's a dialect. It's not a primary language.
Okay.
Oh, one guy said, the sixth love language is going shopping with my wife.
Totally. You get extra points for that.
Yeah, that sounds like a dialect of quality time. She wants you to be with her doing something she enjoys doing. So really, I have not come up with a sixth love language. I am not dogmatic to say there may not be another. But after 25 years, you know, it seems that these five are pretty fundamental and that they apply in all cultures. What has surprised me most is that the book has been translated and published in 50 languages around the world.
That's incredible.
My academic background is anthropology. You know, I have an understanding of culture and cultural differences, but it's been amazing to me. It seems that these five are rather fundamental to human nature.
Now, Dr. Gary Chapman, you've been married 45 years, is that correct?
You know, actually, that's an old statistic. I've been married now for 55 years.
Whoa. Oh, congratulations.
Oh, my goodness.
I got married when I was 9, okay?
I love it. Now, I often have used your book, Things I Wish I'd Known Before I Got Married, in pre-marriage counseling. And one of the segments that always seems pretty popular is talking about the effective way to apologize. because sorry apparently doesn't cut it.
Well, and especially with that attitude.
Yeah,
there.
Totally. And I would guess after 55 years of marriage, you've become pretty good at apologising now and then. Do you have any hints for effectively apologising?
You know, if you don't learn to apologize effectively, you cannot have a good marriage relationship because none of us are perfect, okay?
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting. A number of years ago, a fellow counselor here in our city, Dr. Jennifer Thomas, came to see me, and she said, Gary, I think that not only do people have love languages, I think they have apology languages. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I think that what one person considers to be an apology is not what another person considers to be an apology. And it rang with me because they've been in my office for years arguing over whether or not one of them apologized. You know, a wife would say, well, I would forgive him if he would just apologize. And he would say, I did apologize. And she would say, you didn't apologize. And he said, I told you I was sorry. And she said, that's not an apology. So what we did, we asked thousands of people two questions. When you apologize, what do you typically say or do? Second question, when someone apologizes to you, what do you want to hear them say or do? And their answers fell into five categories. I promise you, we were not looking for five. I like five. We weren't looking for five. And we called them the five apology languages. And we wrote a book. The original title was The Five Languages of Apology. Then the newest title is called When Sorry Isn't Enough. But, yeah, here are the five languages, just briefly. One of them is I'm sorry. It's expressing regret. But you always tell them what you're sorry for. You know, I'm sorry I lost my temper and yelled at you. You don't just say, I'm sorry. But expressing regret, which means I feel badly about what I did or what I said. So expressing regret. Another language is accepting responsibility. I was wrong. Should not have done that. No excuse for that. And for some people, this is what they're wanting to hear. This is how they judge an apology, is do you admit that you're wrong? And then a third apology language is offering to make restitution. What can I do to make it up to you? How can I make this right? And some people have never, ever thought of doing that. But if that is what they can, the other person considers to be a sincere apology, then you can say, I'm sorry, but that doesn't mean much to them. But if you offer to do something to make it right, then they see the sincerity of that. And then a fourth language of apology is expressing the desire to change your behavior. After you've done whatever it is that offended them, you're saying to them, you know, I don't like that about me. I don't want to do that again. I know I did the same thing last month, and I don't want to keep doing this. Can we talk? Can you help me? Can we get a plan so I won't do this again? And for some people, this is what they see as a sincere apology, when you express the desire to change your behavior. And then number five is actually requesting forgiveness. Will you forgive me? I hope you can forgive me. I value our relationship. And for some people, they're waiting for that. They're waiting for you to request forgiveness.
Yeah.
So the key is very simple. Is that you talk with the other person about, you know, what really does make you, you know, feel like I'm sincere in my apology, because I want to speak it in a language that's meaningful to you. It just makes it easier for the person to forgive you, because we if we think they're sincere, we're willing to forgive, but we judge sincerity on our own idea of what a sincere apology looks like.
Yeah, it's such helpful resources to have. And in every way, each of these things, of course, is helping marriages to be more healthy. But why do you think, like, what is the aim of a healthy marriage? What is God's intention for marriage ultimately anyway?
You know, I think it is deep, deep intimacy. The biblical word is one. The two become one. It's the opposite of being alone. You know, God said it's not good for Adam to be alone. The word means cut off or isolated. And the answer, you know, God created Eve, and then God said the two will become one. It's the opposite of being alone. It's being deeply, deeply connected to each other. It's emotional intimacy, where we're sharing love and our other emotions with each other and accepting those emotions and helping each other walk through them. It's intellectual intimacy, where we can talk about, you know, anything and share our opinions and our thoughts about it and not feel put down by the other person. It's social intimacy, where we love doing things together. And it's spiritual intimacy, where we're sharing our journey with each other and sharing things that God impressed upon us, maybe as we read the scriptures or read a book or something. So it's really deep, deep intimacy. I believe God designed marriage to be the most intimate of all human relationships. And when you share that kind of intimacy, marriage is beautiful.
Oh, I like that. Now, for some people out there, with Valentine's rolling around, they want to get off their relationship on the right foot with maybe a potential would-be suitor.
Are you thinking back to like 13-year-old Duncan trying to woo his like 8-year-old crush, like year 8 crush?
Well, I think I was 25 when I started courting my wife. But do you have any suggestions for getting the relationship off on the right foot for some hopeless romantics out there?
Well, you know, if you've been dating the person or relating to the person for a while, you should have asked the question a good while ago. You know, on special occasions, if somebody really wanted to express appreciation to you, what would be meaningful to you? You like flowers? Let me say, no, I'm allergic to flowers. Or do you like chocolate? No, chocolate. No, I don't like chocolate. My stomach doesn't go well with chocolate. You know, you need information. We just assume that, you know, our culture tells us some things. Our culture says, you know, buy candy or buy flowers or, you know, give them a card or whatever. But really, what you really want to know is, what would they find meaningful? Hmm. Now, I don't think anyone, unless they're allergic to flowers, then they're not going to turn down flowers or turn down candy. You know, they realize that you did an act of love here. But it's even more meaningful when you do something that you know the other person would really appreciate. You're still not too late. If I really, honey, really wanted to show you that I loved you, what would you want? Would it be going out to a nice place to eat, or is there a particular gift that you'd like to receive? And some people will tell you, and then others will say, oh, well, I don't know. Anything you do is going to be fine.
You should just know anyway.
Yeah. But I think sometimes we get disappointed when we do one thing, we buy one gift, and we get the sense that they were expecting something else, you know. So it's always better to ask for information.
And in that dating window, obviously, I mean, the five love languages are universal. There's a lot of marriage conversation as part of those. But in that dating window, is that kind of like the practice ground for applying those, or is there other tips you've got for the dating season of life?
Well, I think dating's important. Now, it's not universal, as we know. There are cultures where the parents choose the person you're going to marry. And most of them give you a veto power on that. But I think dating is common in our cultures. And I think the purpose of dating, as I see it, is to get to know each other. And that's why conversation is so important. Or working through a book like the one you mentioned, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Got Married, where you are challenged to discuss certain aspects of life. And as you discuss these things, you determine whether or not you're on the same page or how far apart you are in your ideas about certain things. And it's in the process of that kind of communication that you ultimately make a decision to marry or not to marry. And as we know, many dating relationships end up with one of them breaking up the relationship. And that's not bad. It just means they have discovered over a period of time that you're not the person that they want to invest their life with. And it can be hurt and painful, but it's a part of the process of determining the person that God has for you.
Wow. You know, Dr. Gary Chapman, one of the things that I noticed is that kind of showing and expressing love to my wife has changed over, for me, the last 11 years, is that I think early on it was a date and a time out where we could be, she's very much kind of quality time. But now it's more like if I do the laundry, put the children to bed, wash the dishes and make sure the house is clean, I'm speaking a love language there. Do you know, like it changes and shifts, it seems, a little bit with time.
Well, it can. I tend to think that the love language stays with us for a lifetime, but there are caveats to that.
Yeah.
Sometimes your first love language and your second love language are very, very close. And if you get enough of your primary, then the secondary will kind of rise to the top. But if you take away the top, you take away, let's say, quality time, if you just take that away from her, you don't give her quality time, she may well say, you know, no, this is still my primary language. But if you're giving her enough quality time, you're doing things together, then the acts of service may become, you know, may rise to the top. So I think that can happen for sure.
It's such helpful words of advice this morning. Dr. Gary Chapman, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Laura Duncan. Good to be with you.